Here's what you can look forward to in today's episode.
We have technology now that allows video and audio capture, and I'm seeing that really come to the fore. Thinking about research, not necessarily about brands, but also about brands, because video and audio is prevalent everywhere. We also have technology that helps us analyze what we're hearing. So I see this being the perfect moment to talk with people as if they're people and not ask them to type and write in surveys, but to respond in a more natural way.
Over the last decade, the market research industry has been disrupted. Our largest agencies are struggling to keep up as their customers turn to newer, faster, and cheaper data sources. Now, we are on the edge of yet another major market shift. Now is the time for us to reassert ourselves as the rudder of the brands we love. Thank you for tuning in to the Happy Market Research Podcast, where we are charting the path for the future of market researchers and businesses. Hi, I'm Jamin Brazil, and you're listening to the Happy Market Research Podcast. Today, my guest is Stacy Walker, Consumer Insights leader here at Adobe. We're actually privileged to be in Adobe's office today, and I'm joined by William. Unfortunately, Chloe could not make it because she is being responsible and actually doing work. Thank you, Chloe. No, you're not. Adobe is the global leader in digital media and digital marketing solutions. Additionally, Stacy has headed up insights for Netflix, Walmart, Visa, and has taught at Columbia University in the sociology department. Stacy, welcome to the Happy Market Research Podcast.
I'm happy to be here. Thanks for coming to Adobe.
So I'd like to start with the signature question. Tell us a little bit about your upbringing.
Sure. Well, I grew up in a really diverse area culturally. I grew up next to Queens, and it was a really different experience, I would think, than a lot of people have as their growing up. I had friends from all different cultures, lots of first generation people who I went to school with. And that sort of spurred my interest in learning about different subcultures, cultures, and sort of kind of got me into sociology a little bit.
So tell me a little bit about your parents. What did they do?
My father was an insurance salesman. And my mother worked in real estate. My father was also a double E, so he was an electrical engineer by training, and he loved to tinker with computers, just loved technology. We would have little tiny computers all over the house that he would just toy with. So I think that also encouraged me to move into tech because he got me into programming a little bit.
Back in the days of BASIC?
Yes. Yeah.
So your mom, was she a lifelong real estate agent?
Yeah, I mean, on and off for, I would say, 20 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's interesting you bring up that your dad is a electrical engineer and sort of his tinkeringness with computers. Computers were really, they're a lot more like cars back in those days,
yeah.
Right? And if you wanted to actually have a computer that was, you know, you had to work on the computer, like literally physically do work on the computer. My first, I'll call it real job, was managing a what's called a Wang system, which was a
part.
Do you remember really?
Yes.
It was basically vacuum cleaner type. When literally there was a whole room that was twice as big as the room that we're in right now. That was just the mainframes and you know what I mean and everything like that. And one of the neat parts that I got to help with, I didn't oversee it, but help with, was the actual transition from that mainframe to the desktop, mm-hmm. right? And that was the, I think it was Windows 3.5 or something, like the very first from DOS to Windows leap. And it was a really, just like a roll up your sleeves and get stuff done, wild, wild west. You know, there was no internet, so you had to use different magazines to figure out how to code stuff, right?
And yep.
It was a fun time.
Yeah. Yeah, it was.
I think that probably one of my favorite parts of that was just this grabbing a magazine and digesting the content inside of it because you had to wait 30 days for the next issue to kind of come out. So do you have any memorable experiences programming or working on the computers with your dad?
I just remember when I was 12, I got so excited because I was able to do a printout of like a house design.
Totally.
Totally. It sounds so ridiculous right now because it was so simple, but I was, you know, a kid and it was just
exciting. That's a big deal.
Yeah.
That's a really big deal.
Yeah.
It's been interesting kind of as a starting point, right, to today, you know, driving up here to Adobe in San Jose, downtown San Jose, using Google Maps. And of course, I know the route inside and out, but the reason I used Google Maps was to identify if there were any traffic pattern issues.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like, you go from that, to your point, this like very early stage application of technology, and now all of a sudden it's completely inundated everything that I'm doing right now. And you at Adobe, you guys have been a massive part of my life. In fact, more so than any other tech company outside of maybe Apple, which was my very first computer. My first professional business that I did in college was called Anchor Graphic Design. And I started it so that I could be able to pay off my computer, my Apple computer that I bought. And I used Adobe Illustrator and eventually saved enough money for Adobe Photoshop. And so it was just like this fantastic, once I paid it off, I quit doing the company and just played video games on it, I think. And
it was super. Well, it's great to hear that you were an adopter of our brands even back then.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, thank you. But my broader point is really how this company has sustained through generational shifts, right? As being the leader in this space, which not a lot of companies can say that.
Yeah, I would say that Adobe doesn't sit still or rest on its laurels. We really have changed as the world has changed. We see opportunities in different places, like experience design now, really designing for customer experiences, and moving beyond that to marketing and marketing experiences. So we're kind of the experience company now.
Yeah, it's a neat transformation. Meanwhile, still having the underpinnings of the tool set enabling other companies like even Happy Market Research, you know, through Audition and Photoshop and Premiere and so on and so forth,
yeah.
Right?
It's really great to hear that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So and incidentally, they didn't pay me to do that, nor did they give me free software. In 2003, you were at Netflix.
Yes.
I remember 2003 really well. I remember Netflix at that point in time also. It was a lot of buzz. You guys had a million users. That was just like this breakthrough moment. And then at the same time, you really started seeing the phoenixes come out of the ashes of the dot-com bust that had happened, right, just a year or two earlier. Can you talk just a little bit about why you joined Netflix in those days and what it was like working in the Valley?
Well, at that point, it was a huge opportunity and a great product. You mentioned 2003. I still feel like I'm dating myself by saying this, but we were mailing DVDs at that point. And some of the research that we did was on the mailers themselves and how to get people to not rip right through the entire mailer. Mm-hmm. So that they could mail back the DVD. But it was pretty heady times. We were a very scrappy team in marketing and also really rigorous at the same time. So it was very focused on really understanding the customer, getting a sense of how the brand was performing, especially in relation to Blockbuster.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
But always really metrics driven and conservative in a good way, mm-hmm. with cash so that we could eventually realize that dream of becoming Netflix, being available on the internet. That was always Reed Hastings' goal.
And of course, absolutely one of the most difficult transitions ever that I've heard about, and to navigate that as successfully as he did, especially with Blockbuster declining the acquisition opportunity.
Yeah.
is just like, he is probably top three for me. It turns like hero status. It's just epic, right? Just what an epic story.
Yeah.
The point that you brought up just now about cash is really interesting for me. I'm exposed to a lot of startups and they're burning cash right now. And it feels to me at a tangible level, a lot like what I saw in 1989 and 2000, where people were a lot less concerned about burn rates and a lot more concerned about user acquisition. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder if you're getting that type of feeling with being, you know, in the middle of the Silicon Valley.
I'm not going to say that I have complete deja vu, but I have a little bit of deja vu right now. In part because the not part is because it's not completely based on eyeballs, which it was, if you remember.
100%.
Yeah. And so, yes, I think user acquisition, monthly active use, those are all metrics now that companies focus on. And they're a little bit more tangible, a little bit more concrete than just getting eyeballs. But it still feels a little...
It still feels a little frothy, I guess is how I'd put it.
Not exactly bubble territory, but yes, frothy.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, we recently saw a change in the market, right? A little bit of a correction over the last few days. And I think that's been healthy, you know, kind of seeing that just not explosive growth. But it is interesting to me that you have companies that, and I'm talking about not that are publicly traded, but are really sort of at that early stage, that are, you know, closing $10, $20 million rounds. I'm sure they're earning it, but, you know, on a lot of faith that things are going to go great. So run to cash. That's it, right? So it's run to revenue, race to cash. That's my mantra in startup land. So recently you did some volunteer work for trying to raise awareness of housing issues here. It was in San Mateo.
Yes, in San Mateo County. It was a program put on by joint venture Silicon Valley with Adobe. And myself and three other marketers put together a program for the San Mateo Department of Housing to help them come up with a marketing strategy for second units. Driving adoption of second units, which is a pretty big commitment if somebody is building on their property.
Can you talk a little bit about what you mean by that? I think maybe most of the audience isn't from the area, so.
Sure. So here in Silicon Valley, we have a hugely disproportionate jobs to housing ratio. We have a housing shortage. I'm trying to avoid saying that it's a crisis because that's language that sort of turns people's brains off.
Totally. But I think mathematically, I just saw the statistic. I haven't validated the statistic, but it's like 3 to 50. I don't know if that's true or not, but it was an eyeball. My eyebrows went up. I didn't
know. Yeah. And it's a tremendous problem for traffic, for people moving out of the area. And it's not great for communities. So that really struck a chord with me in terms of a passion project where I could help the community get involved and hopefully drive some people to build on the land that they own so that they can accommodate either family members or rentals or teachers who can't afford to live in the area.
It's a worthwhile cause. And it was three colleagues, is that correct, that you partnered with?
Yeah.
And all Adobe employees?
They were all Adobe employees.
Does Adobe help sponsor your time or other materials in that, or?
Yes, they do. So they have a very generous volunteering program. You can volunteer some of your time and the hours that you put in to community service, they will actually match donations for charities.
Wow.
Adobe's a great place to work. So if anyone's thinking about it, they should really consider it. It's a great place to work.
We just did an interview, I think it's publishing in about 6 weeks, with the founder and CEO of Research for Good. And they are a panel supplier that has a double bottom line approach to their business. And they actually started out with that as the thesis. Mm-hmm. So they, for every dollar of profit, 50 cents or 50% is donated to a specific nonprofit that is feeding the hungry. It's a very worthwhile cause. And it was interesting in talking with her about the tension between, you know, balancing a mission-driven company against a as opposed to like profit against profit, right? And especially in the context of, you know, she's not a billion-dollar company. They're privately held. They're in a highly competitive, as you know, marketing research sample providers. It seems like it's a decreasing asset from it, right? But yet, having said that, they're doing well. I'm not saying that I don't have visibility on the books, but my point is that the communication of what I see in the marketplace is very positive. And their claim is that our employees and our customers get behind the fact that we are a missions-driven organization. And also we deliver best-in-class quality, et cetera, et cetera. So you can have both, right?
I believe that you can. I believe that you can do well and also do good.
Right.
Yeah.
Well said. So we have a little game we want to play. This is going to be an experiment. This might get cut if it blows up.
Okay.
So in this kind of made up narrative, you've got 10 Stacey bucks and you get to invest in a marketing research technology that's going to pay out in 5 years. So what is that? 2023, I guess. And these are the topics. Then I'll hand you the list and you can tell me where you're going to distribute your 10 Stacey bucks.
Okay. Right? You're not going to set this up as a conjoint?
I just blew the mic. Okay. I thought about that, but I felt like it would be less exciting for
this is probably less time consuming.
Maybe.
Yeah.
It's going to be full factorial too. So it's going to be really exciting. Big data, social listening, traditional focus groups, survey tools, voice, that'd be like Alexa, mm-hmm. Google Home, etc. Blockchain technology, mm-hmm. AR, VR, machine learning and AI, which I, for some reason, I put those together, so, right? And then brand trackers. Okay, so you're going to invest in a company with 10 Stacey bucks, and these are your 10 products. So you've got the pen. And I'm super interested to see where you put your 10 Stacey bucks.
This is a tough one.
You are trying to maximize your outcome. But also, you know, of course, you have the risk mitigation factor as well.
Right.
Degree, I guess.
Wait, I'm a venture capitalist. So all it's going to have, I might get fired, but I'm not putting my own dollars on the line.
You do get fired or you're rehired somewhere else. Yeah, just keep being promoted by accidentally being right. 1 in 40.
Right, exactly. I don't have to have a great track record. Okay.
All right, let me see him.
Here we go.
I normally hate asking respondents to do zero sum questions.
It's
the highest dropout rate.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah. I apologize about poor survey design. All right. So for the record, big data got zero. Social listening got zero. Focus groups got zero. Survey tools got zero. Voice got a 4. And that was the first one you wrote down, I think.
It was.
Blockchain got 2. AR got 2. And that was the last one that you wrote down. And AI machine learning got a 2. Talk to us. What was resonating with you?
Well, it was a toss-up between voice and blockchain, two technologies that I see as really emerging, especially when you think about Amazon putting products out these days, hardware that can listen and respond, Google, et cetera. So I think that that's going to be pretty huge. Blockchain... I'm excited about blockchain, but I do feel like there's a lot of investment that's happening in it. I'm excited as a market researcher because it will eventually give us real fidelity into who is taking surveys and doing research. It'll tie it all together. So I'm actually very excited about it, but I think maybe the opportunity is starting to crest. And likewise with the other plates that I have there, AI, machine learning, I feel like that's on its way up, but also mm-hmm. cresting. And virtual reality, I don't know how I feel about it. I would invest more in augmented reality. That's where I see things going versus virtual reality.
Totally.
Those are my $10 plays.
Yeah. So think about let's piggyback on voice for a little bit, because I'm super passionate on this particular subject, especially relevant to market research, because I'm not seeing a lot of market researchers thinking about how they can help their customers navigate the data divide in a voice-only world, right? So we start moving more and more towards away from a traditional, wherever I am, I get exposed to something if somebody pays for it, right? So if you're wealthy enough as a brand, you get to buy an end cap in the grocery store or whatever, right? Or a big billboard. You can get on the front page of Google AdWords, Amazon, search results, etc. But in a voice-only world, the transaction is me in the kitchen, Alexa, buy paper towels, right? Or that's my favorite go-to example because I literally do that. But it's something, buy something that I'm out of. And then Alexa fulfills that. And in that world, I think, marketing research has a important job to do to help inform brands today before it's too late, before they're completely disrupted because this massive change in the user journey, the user consumption journey. So as you kind of work through where your bet was, what were you thinking? As I totally screwed up that question because I answered it before. Market researchers don't do this.
I believe that's called leading the witness. what I was thinking is a few things. We have technology now that allows video and audio capture, and I'm seeing that really come to the fore. Thinking about research, not necessarily about brands, but also about brands, because video and audio is prevalent everywhere. We also have technology that helps us analyze what we're hearing. So I see this being the perfect moment to talk with people as if they're people and not ask them to type and write in surveys, but to respond in a more natural way. So, I see that emerging for doing studies, but also how we interact to order products. It's more of a natural way to get things done.
I love it. You're right, because you start moving away from the 10-point scales, and the way that we can do that is qualitative at scale, right?
Yeah.
And that's exactly the point.
Yeah.
That we can process not just 10 conversations, but we can process thousands of conversations and then make decisions in as long as it takes out the conversation.
Right.
Super powerful stuff. Well, I'll let you know in 5 years how your Stacey Bucks have evolved. So what is the function inside Adobe of market research?
Market research helps the company make decisions. We help inform whether or not products should stay in the market, come out of the market. We help product marketers with their positioning and messaging. We, of course, do run the business activities, so we have more programmatic research as well that helps us understand the customer journey. So as they come to our website and visit us, who are they? What are they doing there? What's their intent? How can we improve the website to help them? once they sign up, we figure out where they're coming from, how their experience is going, and then we have other touch points. Because we have a subscription model, we want to understand how people are doing as they leave us, and you know, if there was something that we can do to bring them back again. So we have programmatic research, but we also have strategic research. We do all kinds of research, qualitative, quantitative, and we're embedded in a larger analytics team, which is really powerful because we can connect actions with why.
Talk to me a little bit about the larger team, that the, I'll call it, I don't know, this isn't the right way you guys frame it, I'm sure, but sort of this data ecosystem. Mm-hmm. Where does market research fit? Like, who's inside of that sphere?
Inside of the data ecosystem,
yeah,
sphere.
Yeah, right. That makes sense. It's silly. I didn't mean it like that.
So that contains behavioral data. So actions that might have been taken in a product launches, et cetera. It contains data about website visits. It's pretty much what you would expect from a digital company. And the benefit of being co-located with an analytics team is that you get access to the data and you're able to put everything together.
Got it.
Yeah.
So is the role of like UX sitting inside of market research, or is that a different division?
It's actually a different division. Yeah. They are really pretty focused on understanding the product as it exists today, user actions and workflows, and generating ideas for building new products.
Is there overlap in the types of projects that are done between those two, you know, like what I think of as traditional market research versus UX?
Yeah, most certainly. And there are times when we work together.
Got it. So there's part bridges that are built.
Yeah, we are a very collaborative and highly matrixed organization.
Mm-hmm. You have to be.
Yep. as most big companies, I think, are. And so we work together. There are areas of expertise that they have that we don't have, and vice versa.
Totally. How do you guys like practically navigate that? Do you have like an example of a project where there was some sort of collaboration?
Yeah, it's funny. I don't have, the reason I chuckled a bit is because I don't have a standard pat answer for it. Every project is different. There are meetings with a variety of stakeholders that come to them, and we typically will hash out some kind of a project plan based on that. But there's no one right answer to that question.
So in that sort of framework, how do you guys handle, and this is like super inside baseball, how do you guys handle corporate budgets?
Oh, that is super inside baseball. delicately. I mean, we do touch base as teams to understand what the roadmaps look like. And we try to allocate accordingly. But yeah, delicately is the answer to that.
Yeah, because you'd have to be agile on it, right? Based on whatever the specific needs are at that point in time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting stuff.
Yeah.
Right there. Market research has got a ton of buzz around blockchain. And you talked about it a moment ago in your investment thesis.
I like that it's a thesis.
Yeah,
now.
That's it. Yeah. It's like
that
literally
sounds smart.
I guarantee you, everyone's going to be looking for this online. We're going to start a fund on Stacey Bucks. Yeah, the new currency, cryptocurrency. But as it relates with blockchain, are you seeing any very specific applications of it, or where you guys are paying for it, or other brands are paying for it?
I'm not seeing it realizing its potential right now, but I see the potential. You know, obviously in currency, it's real. But in market research, I think it's pretty nascent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is the tipping point, or what do you think the tipping point is for blockchain when it becomes part of our consideration as researchers? Is it like specific to just the panel quality? You know what I mean? Like the first company that actually introduces, we'll pick on Research Now, that if Research Now launches, you know, a new blockchain technology, or, you know what I mean? Is there like a big differentiation there?
I think if a research panel company were to launch something like this, market researchers would be pretty excited about it. I think, so when you said tipping point, I thought that there are a bunch of different things that could come into play. One of them being consumers' willingness to put themselves out there and be identifiable and opting into that. So I think we're at a point where that could happen. People are fairly identifiable now. So it's just making it a bit more of a formal, a more formal way of doing it.
Yeah, and then, you know, making sure that the monetization model makes sense, because that's part of that's part of the choke point, right? Is
One of the things that I would also be excited about is people actually selling their data. We're kind of getting it for free right now. I'm sure that you've heard the expression that data is the new oil.
I have.
Right? It's just out there and go for it. But I think that that's a more fair and equitable model.
I totally agree. The problem is that the economics start changing, obviously, if we have to go to the pump versus the ground.
Certainly.
And then that sort of starts, for me, thinking about where the big disruption is going to be inside of our space, right? So it's going to be that. That is going to be, for me, the next 3-year sort of window of, you know, how blockchain, who brings blockchain to market, because it will be disruptive. And then also, is the market going to be willing to pay for it? Because, you know, right now you might have an average cost per complete of, I'm making this up, I have no idea what it is, but we'll say hypothetically it's $3 or $5. I'm talking about like if you go directly to, you know, the panel company that's the cheapest, and then for Gen Pop. But in that world, you know, am I going to sell you my data for $3 for a 15-minute survey? Probably not, right? I'm going to charge something for my time, and then also the intrinsic value of all the stuff that is tethering to it, whatever that is.
Well, I mean, you know, consider the magnitude of the decisions that get made off of that data.
Totally.
So I think having valid data is really crucial to organizations.
So the your value there is trumping the cost, because it's really trivial. I mean, it's still the tail wagging the dog.
Right.
You mentioned Adobe is a great place to work. And you've worked at a number of other fantastic places. In fact, Netflix, they produced one of the most famous HR decks. I don't know if you ever read, right?
This, I have.
Oh, yeah, of course you did. So when you think about, given your breadth of experience, and especially in the Silicon Valley, what do you see as the characteristics of an all-star employee?
I can name a few things specific to market research, but also more broadly. Broadly, somebody who is flexible and agile, can work through change. That's really important in Silicon Valley. And for market research, I will say that some of the best researchers that I've hired have been excellent communicators. I fundamentally believe that market research has a marketing problem sometimes. So it's great to, you know, get these aha moments, but if you can't communicate them effectively, they fall flat. And so I look for people who have really, really good communication skills verbally and visually.
Have you, do you have like specific resources you use to help train market researchers on storytelling?
We have internally at Adobe used Duarte for storytelling and data visualization. And that's been very helpful. A lot of the folks who come in, we have templated decks that they can use and start from. But it does take some training to get people up to that. To speed. Yeah.
So when you think over the last maybe few years, Do you find that corporate researchers are bringing more and more research of the research function in-house, or are they moving it out to vendors, specialized vendors?
It's a mix. I've seen it go in both directions, just like I've seen departments centralized and decentralized. So it really depends on what you're trying to tackle. I've seen hybrid models that work as well. I'm not necessarily seeing a trend one way or another, at least in Silicon Valley. I think historically, companies here have, in that sort of scrappy way, taken on work internally. But even companies that have professed, oh, we don't use outside research, I've eventually found out that they have used outside research. It's really about how you want to spend your time and how you want to spend your budget. We get value from using external resources, but what I find where they can't bridge that last mile is really telling the story. They don't spend time within our walls. I find they don't know our issues quite deeply enough. And that's not to say that they can't get better, but it's really hard to keep a pace of all the nuances and change that happen within an organization. So you do need somebody on the inside to bridge that gap and tell a story.
Do you have then partners who have desks here or here at some regular sequencing?
We do from some of our vendors. And that goes so far. Yeah. It's still not going to get us to the last mile because they're not in every conversation that they could be in.
Right. And the obvious point being that you have to have that research owned internally in order for it to have the impact on the organization
right.
to affect change.
Yeah. And we would prefer to be the ones who are driving the change and not have an outside vendor do that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah. It makes perfect sense. Yeah. Vested interest and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. Are there any other gaps that you're seeing? You know, if somebody's listening to this podcast, for example, and is there something you'd like to say, gosh, shout out, I really wish somebody would do this, fix blockchain or whatever.
Yeah, fix blockchain would be one. more video analysis. That's another one that we're kind of always on the lookout for. Really showing the human side of things. Those are some of the things that we look for because we're awash in data. We need to be able to pull it together and show the human aspect.
I love that, awash in data. I mean, that's the exact depiction of it. We're drowning in the oil.
Yeah.
Right? It's the formation of the oil. And you guys are doing a lot of work on that too, right? The formation of the data and then taking it through that full life cycle to feedback from the user perspective.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's not to say that we don't generate insights from the data. Of course we do.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, there's a lot of information out there and we need ways to distill it and put a face on it. Yeah.
My guest today has been Stacy Walker from Adobe, head of insights. Thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Everyone else have a wonderful day. And please, as always, we love your feedback. Leave a comment and ratings on Apple iTunes. That enables other insights professionals like yourself to easily find valuable content like this. Have a great day. Bye. Next time on the Happy Market Research Podcast, I'll be joined by Mark Zionst, CEO of Automated Insights. This is a great opportunity for you to be able to learn from a seasoned CEO how he applies his 2 decades of experience to drive very fast, rapid, healthy growth in our industry. Have a great day. Hope you can tune in.